You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
People Against Prisons Aotearoa activists were recently in court over trespass charges in a protest against the solitary confinement of a transgender prisoner. During the court case, they discovered police had been wiretapping the organisers' phones. I spoke with Emmy Rakete from People Against Prisons Aotearoa, and first asking her about the court case.
Last week, three organisers with People Against Prisons Aotearoa were in court on trespass charges. So last year, these members of the organisation occupied a Department of Corrections office in Hamilton to protest a very mentally ill transgender prisoner who we've been working with being placed into solitary confinement. All the international research shows that solitary confinement is extremely bad for you, not just physically but mentally. It's closely associated with suicides in prison. So knowing that this woman was in imminent danger from the conditions that Corrections was putting her in, we decided to have this sit-in protest at a Corrections office. And so they were arrested, and what we found out yesterday when they were in court is that the police then tapped their phones.
Why do you feel they chose to tap the phones of the organisers?
So the role of police, not just in this country but around the world really, is to suppress any resistance to the government and the interests of the wealthy classes. And we see this even going back to like Parihaka in this country. It was the police who threw the people out of Parihaka and into prison so that their land could be sold to settlers. And what we're seeing here is fundamentally the same thing, where the police are acting in defence of the class interests of the rich and in the interests of the government. And so this was an explicitly political attack on our organisation by the New Zealand police.
So do you feel this was more an intimidation tactic on People Against Prisons Aotearoa rather than they had legitimate concerns about your organising and felt it was possibly dangerous?
Yeah, absolutely. This was a completely non-violent protest. They literally walked in, chained themselves to a desk, and then sat there demanding that this woman was removed from life-threatening conditions. Nobody was harmed. Nobody was ever at risk of being harmed. The Search and Surveillance Act, which we believe the surveillance was conducted under, says that this kind of surveillance can only be used against people who are accused of a crime where the prison sentence is 7 years or more. And this was a simple trespass case. All of the charges, all of the people who were in court were discharged without conviction. So it was an incredibly, incredibly minor crime, if we even want to call it that. So it absolutely does not warrant this level of surveillance by the police. The only reason that the surveillance was conducted was to try to limit our organization's ability to organize. And, you know, that didn't happen. We continue and, you know, will continue to do our work. But the fact that the New Zealand police is engaging in this kind of surveillance against people who have political beliefs that are inconvenient to the government, I think is a really, really dangerous standard to be setting that I think everyone should be really worried about and really angry about.
What sort of implications do you believe the police's ability to tap phones has for organisations like yours?
I mean, we saw 10 years ago with Operation 8 and the terror raids, so-called terror raids that were launched around this country at non-violent Māori activists and left-wing political organisations that the New Zealand government and the New Zealand police are very willing to use surveillance to create vast conspiracies that do not exist in an effort to drag people through the courts and dismantle political organisations that they don't like. If they are gearing up to do that again, I think everyone should be extremely concerned about it. We saw in the last few months that Greenpeace were being tailed. There's obviously been an immense extension of the kinds of surveillance powers that were misused 10 years ago to try to create the Operation 8 raids, and I think nobody should be pleased to see that that could happen again and that there's no reason it couldn't happen again.
Was any of the calls or messages, were any of them used as evidence in the court case?
No, they weren't because, frankly, we are not that interesting. I don't think that the public safety was improved in any meaningful way by the police knowing what my friends are planning on doing for lunch, and that's most of what we're talking about over the phone anyway.
And you're not sure whether the police are still tapping the phones, or have they said anything?
No, the statement of evidence that was provided to our lawyer by the police simply said that the police began tapping these phones after these members of our organisation were arrested. It says nothing about the extent of the surveillance other than that calls and texts were being intercepted. It doesn't say how long this surveillance will be going on for. It doesn't say whether it's still ongoing or if they stopped at some point. And it doesn't say anything about whether they had a warrant or whether this was warrantless wiretapping. We simply don't know at this point.
And will you ever find out, or is this something that's just really difficult to get information about?
Yeah, we're seeking legal advice right now, but as an organisation, we're planning on carrying this through right to the end and using whatever means we have at our disposal to find out what happened, who allowed it to happen, and what we can do to make sure that this never happens again to anybody, not just us.
I then spoke with Kylie Quince about police surveillance in Aotearoa more generally, and began by asking her what powers of surveillance police currently have.
The point is that it is a crime for anyone, any citizen, police included, to intercept private communications between citizens with a surveillance device. So that is an offence under our Crimes Act, which means that the police or any other citizen or any law enforcement authority, if they want to intercept private communications or to surveil a citizen in any way that involves a device, whether that be an interception device, a tracking device, for example, that you might attach to someone's car or other property, must be done pursuant to a surveillance device warrant under the Search and Surveillance Act 2012. So in New Zealand, we had a significant overhaul of our search and surveillance laws 5 years ago. That's currently under review by the Law Commission. Because the powers and the way in which law enforcement surveillance, search and surveillance is done in New Zealand, we're quite different under that Act, and so it's currently under review. So what happens is, so again, our basic starting point is that citizens have the right not to have their personal dignity, property, their personal communications with friends and family intercepted. So everyone has a reasonable expectation of privacy. And that's protected by the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act, so our freedom of speech and freedom of association, so not to have the state or law enforcement agencies intrude into our private lives. So that's what we're balancing here, the right of citizens not to have their lives unduly affected by state or police surveillance or search and seizure powers, with human rights obligations or our civil rights not to have our privacy and dignity unduly sort of interfered with. And so in order to do that, the police must obtain a surveillance device warrant if they're going to tap your phone, for example, which is what happened to the three people in the People Against Prisons Aotearoa case recently. And a judge has to listen to the application and can issue a surveillance device warrant on the basis that there are reasonable grounds to suspect that a relevant offence either has been committed already or is likely to be committed in the future. So that's the first thing. Is there a relevant, likely offence that has happened or will happen? And the second thing is that the there must be a connection, obviously, between the granting of the warrant and the allowing of surveillance and the likelihood that surveillance is going to get evidence for the police to use. So one, is there a relevant offence? Two, is the granting of the surveillance likely to net them relevant evidence that can be used in a case? So they shouldn't do that lightly is the issue here.
So with the sort of overhaul of surveillance laws and the Surveillance Act, do you feel police are possibly abusing their powers?
The data that the Law Commission has released in the surveillance, the review of the Act kicked off in November of last year, and the data they've used in that review is that between 2012, so that's when the Act came into force, and 2015, there were 351 applications for surveillance device warrants. Every single one of them has been granted. Now, either that raises red flags in my book. Either the police have been extremely parsimonious in their applications, so that they're only making applications where they know that they are going to, that they've got really good evidence in terms of the grounds to suspect offending and that they're going to get good evidence from the surveillance, or those warrants are being granted too easily and the threshold has been too low. My suspicion would be the latter, that it would seem that given that all of the talk before the reforms was that we take human rights and the expectations of privacy of citizens really seriously, that seems a little hard to justify then 100% of surveillance device warrants being granted in that first sort of 3 year period of the operation of the Act. What we can say and what the police are likely to say in response to any criticism of that ilk is that in almost all of those applications, there has been evidence that has been used to seek charges. The issue in relation to the current case with the three young protesters, People Against Prisons Aotearoa, is that the warrant was granted on the day that they were arrested for a very, very low-level trespass offence. There are three young people who have, you know, trespassed against property, sure, chained themselves or handcuffed themselves to a desk. That is not a serious offence. Remember, I said that the warrant should only be given in relation to a relevant offence. Relevant offence is defined as an offence there that is likely to or could result in 7 years of imprisonment or an offence under the Arms Act, so obviously serious offending involving firearms, or offences against the under the Psychoactive Substances Act. So it's clearly that the warrant regime was intended only to apply in circumstances where the judge would see that it's being used to prevent or detect serious crime, so that surveillance is proportionate to the seriousness of suspected offending. Trespass is not in that category. So they'd committed a trespass. They had to then overcome the threshold of telling the judge, we think that there might be offending that is much, much more serious than trespass. To be honest, I don't know how they overcame that threshold.
How do you feel the police's powers sort of affect the way groups like People Against Prisons Aotearoa operate? Do you feel they're possibly being used as a bit of an intimidatory tactic?
I've no doubt, and that's not a new thing. I mean, the surveillance. New Zealand is largely a safe country, which means that the police, you know, I think they quite like to find something to do. And you know, we're not talking about Basque separatism. We're not talking about, you know, the IRA. We're not talking about violent political movements here. This is a peaceful political protest movement. Citizens are entitled to do that. That's what the Bill of Rights and Human Rights Act are there for, to protect the right of people to have different political opinions from the majority, the right of people to protest, the right of people to be around like-minded people in terms of freedom of movement. This is, in my view, definitely using a sledgehammer to crack a nut. You know, not that I'm saying those people are nutty. I am completely on board with the decarceration movement. But it was non-violent offending. It was peaceful offending. This was, in my view, from what I've seen of what's been publicly disclosed, a very disproportionate response to a trespass. A good argument to support that assertion is that all three of them were discharged without conviction. Now, discharge without conviction in court is not an easy outcome to secure. Basically, it's likely to happen either where it's a first offence, so you're talking about people that are not in the habit of committing crimes, or where the conviction would be out of all proportion to the offending. My suspicion is that it was that, that a conviction for trespass, a very minor offence, would be out of all proportion to a non-violent protest in a you know, well-functioning democracy.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.